Les conférences du Collège de France.
Bonsoir à toutes et à tous. Il est 17h, nous allons commencer. C'est un grand plaisir pour moi d'introduire mon collègue et ami le professeur Akihito Suzuki, qui intervient ce soir dans le cadre d'un accord de réciprocité qui est une des fiertés du Collège de France avec le Tokyo College, où il enseigne, ce qui nous permet d'avoir de fructueux échanges. J'ai déjà eu l'occasion l'année dernière de discuter avec Akihito Suzuki d'un sujet qui me tient à cœur, la peste noire. Et certains d'entre vous ont peut-être également entendu la professeure Naoko Shimazu, qui dirige le Tokyo College, venir ici également comme professeur invité il y a quelques mois. Pour présenter rapidement Akihito Suzuki, il est professeur d'histoire de la médecine à l'Université de Tokyo, spécialiste de la psychiatrie dans le Japon du XXe siècle. Et c'est de cette question, évidemment, qu'il va nous entretenir aujourd'hui. Il a acquis une renommée internationale sur ces sujets, mais aussi plus généralement sur le pouvoir sanitaire, sur les professions médicales, et ce, dans une perspective transnationale. Qu'il me soit permis de citer deux de vos livres. Le premier était « Madness at Home » et qui concernait déjà la famille, mais en Angleterre, au XVIIIe siècle, 1820-1860. Il était paru à Berkeley en 2006. Et le deuxième, « Reforming Public Health in Occupied Japan », est paru à Londres, chez Routledge, en 2011. D'autres travaux suivent, dont Akihito Suzuki va vous entretenir. Il est actuellement dans une tournée européenne. Il va donner plusieurs lectures sur ce sujet et vous dire donc le plaisir de vous laisser la parole ici. Nous allons ensuite pouvoir échanger. Et c'est vrai que quand il y a, au printemps dernier, à Tokyo, nous avions évoqué ensemble cette occasion, cette belle occasion de rencontre. Évidemment que puisqu'il s'agissait d'histoire de l'Italie, de l'histoire de la folie, de grands noms, comme ceux de Michel Foucault, apparaissaient, naturellement dans notre conversation. Et donc, cher Akihito, c'est un plaisir de te céder la parole. Ce moment est pour toi et le Collège de France est très fier et heureux d'accueillir cette parole.
Okay. Thank you so much for a wonderful introduction. I'm sorry, my French skill doesn't exist. So I think I should talk in English. Today, I'm going to talk about madness at home in Tokyo, the psychiatrist, the patient, and the family, from about 1920 to 1945. Today's topic is something like that. In the first section, I will talk about introduction. About European history of madness and mental hospitals and Japanese counterpart. And in the second section, I will talk about the use of the family as a kind of place to confine insane people. Okay, and in the third section, I will talk about mental hospitals, which was completely imported institution from European countries for the Japanese ideas. The fourth section is, so what in this situation of the domestic confinement and mental hospital, the role of a psychiatrist? And finally, I would like to conclude. Perhaps many of you might know about the history of mental hospitals and their patients have been among the major topics in the late 20th and early 21st centuries. In France, as you might know, Michel Mental Hospital in Paris and other French areas has been a wonderful books by Michel Foucault, Dora Weiner, John Goldstein, etc. In London and other areas, Roy Porter, Andrew Scull, and Digby, and many people wrote about London and other zones. Okay, and in mental hospitals in Italy and the Netherlands, Germany, the USA, there are, I might say, hundreds of books and papers about these kind of things. And in the mental hospital, we particularly look at the studies of patients and people with a mental health condition. So Foucault on Pierre Levielle and Hercule Baubin and Goldstein on Nanette Leroy and Porter on John Percival and many psychiatric or many mental illness individuals and patients became a subject of new research. And my basic question is, what has happened in Japan? So first of all, I would like to introduce the present situation of Japan. Now, this is the what is the present situation of Japan? Psychiatric care beds per 100,000 population. Japan is really, I might say, strange. Japan has so many beds if compared with other countries. Likewise, length of stay at hospital for mental illnesses are the statistics taken in 2014. Japan is almost several times larger. Okay? And you might know, if you look at this in the historical period between 1960 and 2010, almost all countries' number of rate of beds are declining, but Japan started to keep or even rose. So Japanese psychiatric scene has something different. You might say something unique, but you know there are something we should explain why Japan has become something like this. Okay. So this paper will examine the historical background of Japan's strange international situation. The major argument is this: the strength of the family, as well as the rise of psychiatrists, and I would argue the rise of patients in the early 20th century. So this was perhaps the most important part. Now, first of all, let me explain the basic legal things. Japan had two laws governing places of care and cure. The first law is Mental Patients Custody Act, 1900, and the Mental Hospitals Act, 1919. The first is to confine mental patients usually in their own home. And a second is to build mental hospitals. Okay, now the former established the patient's house as a place of care and confinement. It has become customary across many domains during the Tokugawa era. We think that this started in the 17th century, and many areas started to have this custom. Now, in the 1880s, many prefectures introduced the custody into their local administration. And in 1900, this custom became the national law. The latter established mental hospitals as the major place for psychiatry and medicalized the space. Okay, so this is the basic legal system. So under the Mental Hygiene Act, published, created in 1950 after the Second World War, abolished Mental Patients Custody Act, and now Japanese care of psychiatry became only mental hospital. So this is the basic legal structure. Now, if you look at the earlier half of the 20th century, that means both the patient's home and the mental hospitals were legal in the early half of the 20th century. So we do have two choices, okay? And if historians look through patients' case record kept in psychiatric hospitals, the case histories are really more actual pictures than the legal argument, and patients, families, and medical practitioners interacted with the societal context in case histories. Okay, and perhaps most important part is case histories are created from one individual to another. So we are talking about information about the individual patient. So this of looking at the case history is a really interesting part. So in Japan, many historians started to recognize this, and they have started to examine the case histories of mental hospitals, which document the condition of individual patient, as well as diseases and medical practitioners. And nowadays, in English, we do have Yumi Kim, Madness in the Family, Women, Care, and Illness in Japan, published in 2022. Now, this paper is based on a reading of about 6,000 case histories from the Oji Brain Hospitals. Oji Brain Hospitals were established in 1901 and since the air raid in 1945, it was demolished. Okay, so we do, and in the about 1923 or something like that, it has a kind of fire. So the we have only 6,000, but that is a really substantial number. And a case histories talk about an individual patient, so you know about the patient, and at the same time, since we do have 6,000 cases, so we can use a statistical method. So this is the case history. The left is written by the doctors. Central is written by nurses, and the final is weight and these kind of data. So these are all this single individual's information. And since we do have a lot of cases, we can use the statistical method. And these are the numbers of patients by 5-year intervals, and up is schizophrenia, and down is GPI, general paralysis of insanity caused by syphilis. So these two diseases have very different change, don't you think so? So the schizophrenia, men and women follows almost same shape. But if you look at something like GPI, the number of the male patients are much larger than female things. So these kind of things is based on the large number of cases of OG Brain Hospital. Okay, and OG Brain Hospital is private mental hospitals. So private means that is not belong to the nation, the city, or ward, or town, or something like that. That was owned by a manager, okay? And it was based on the highly advanced medical market that has existed since the Tokugawa period. You know, Tokugawa period is, relatively difficult to explain. That was essentially a feudalistic society, but has a very advanced commercial network or medical market. So in Europe, medical licenses and the medical market are two major driving forces. So Hal Cook, Matthew Ramsey, Colin Jones, and these people are arguing about medical license and medical market. Now, in Japan, during the Tokugawa period, the idea of medical licenses is very small, whereas the the medical market was very strong. So in mental hospitals in Japan, the major players were first the family. They were important consumer of medical or psychiatric service. And then this was followed by the patient and by psychiatrists. So we are talking about, when we talk about mental hospitals in Japan from the late 19th century, we are talking about the family, patient, and medical practitioner or psychiatrist. So today's lecture uses case histories that are very rich in revealing the three agents. And yes. And let me go to the domestic care. Now, as many of you might know, Japan used to have no hospitals at all. So the fundamental question of the hospital, you might know that every society had hospitals. Now, in Asia and in Japan and perhaps in China and Korea, there's no idea of hospital. And the situation of Japan until the late 19th century, the lack of the basic concept of the hospital. Now, this is a very difficult question to answer, but many people argue that, okay, perhaps Christianity contributed to the rise of hospital, or Japanese isolationism during the Tokugawa period might contribute to the lack of the hospital. But, you know, there are a single hospital in Edo created in the early 18th century. But, you know, we are talking about a very small hospital. And in the in the early 19th century, the number of patients was about 50 or so. We are talking very small hospitals. And there are some doctors who wanted to say that, yeah, we need to create hospitals, but they didn't have any effect. But perhaps the important thing is Japanese people who visited Europe and wrote enthusiastically about Western hospitals. The person like Daikokuya Kodayu, Fukuzawa Yukichi, and Shibusawa Eiji, and many others visited Western Hospital and say, oh, this is a wonderful institution, so Japan should imitate this kind of things. And perhaps Fukuzawa Yukichi and Shibusawa Eiji appeared in the 10,000, what is that, paper money. So we're talking about, you know, people who are interested in essentially imitating Western way. So for many Japanese people, hospital was something they imitated, the Western society. But going back to the domestic or family thing, the difference between Japan, between Europe and Japan in domestic confinement is, at least in the 19th century, is very clear. Perhaps in England, you can easily imagine Charlotte Bronte published Jane Eyre, which had a mad woman in the attic. And in France, Honoré de Balzac published an episode about a poor middle-aged patient in Le Médecin de Campagne. And this person suffered from serious cretinism in a poor part of the village and had been taken care of by his elderly mother. So these examples of home-confined mad people, mad persons, were talked in a very negative rhetoric. Now, in Japan, I would say almost complete opposite. They admired the patient confined in the home. Until the Meiji Restoration, Japan relied on the family and to a lesser extent, the small community to take care of patient suffering from chronic and mental illness. So we think that Confucianism provided the everyday practice and dominant ideology. So the government tried to educate people to obey authority and to be pious toward their fathers and mothers, their brothers and sisters. There was almost no mention of individual perspective. So each member was usually the a member of the family. So that was a really important part during the Tokugawa period. So many record of filial piety type of discourse were produced. This is a common name for national and regional Confucian promotion books of how to deal with the sickness of people. And there are about, according to one historian's account, about 100 manuscripts in many areas about these records of filial piety. And the overwhelming majority was essentially taking care of family members, and about 5% of them were mental illness. Okay, so this, and if you are interested, you can read many of these books. Left is manuscript, and the right is published things. So please consult these materials if you want to look at what was the major advice of the government to people about their family's long-term illness. Now, this kind of continuity with dramatization of madness during Tokugawa era also existed, which is evident in major works in Kabuki and other theatrical and musical performers. Many mad men, mad women appeared in the kabuki and these kind of things. So, and many of them were a kind of this theatrical dramatization of mad woman or mad man. Okay, so this continued, and there were many cases of confusion and moral domestic care until the early and mid 20th centuries. First of all, Shibusawa Eiichi, whose portrait in the 10,000 money, and he wrote a kind of autobiography in 1920s, and he wrote about something like this. When he was just a boy, his elder sisters became insane, and he took care of the sister, and, you know, he became really admired by his neighbors, because he contributed his own emotion to the care of the man's sister. And in the fictional things, I would like to introduce two really famous literary works. The first is Shimazaki Tōsen, and he wrote one of the most well-read long novel, Before the Dawn. Okay. And at the end of this novel, he depicted his father's experience of being confined in some hut or something like that. So that is the most famous novel. And as far as the theatrical performance, perhaps the most famous and most popular things is Kikuchi-kan, the housetop madman. And I used this poster in this kind of thing. So the left is the famous thing, okay? And Kikuchi-kan, who wrote this drama in 1916, and this was a kind of happy ending story of a younger brother taking care of the insane or mad elder brother. So, and this situation was painted by a wonderful, painters, and this was performed in the Imperial Theater, which is one of the most luxurious things. And this was performed by two really famous kabuki players. So this essentially say taking care of a madman in your own house is something very good. And this is one of the main situations in Japan. Okay, and this is the Imperial Theater, and just by chance, it has the film made in France as a kind of performance. Now, So we think that domestic confinement was established during the 17th century in urban and rural regions. And mental hospitals started in large cities around and after the Meiji Restoration. Now, two things, really important and almost silent. Patients are what the police calls patients not confined. These are about 70 to 80% of all lunatics in the 20th century. So if you read a lot of materials, you just have an encounter with not confined patients. So Toyota Masako, a famous essayist, wrote about an insane woman in the Yotsugi area, an industrial area facing the Arakawa River, or asking non-medical personnel existed and to take care of the patient. And Koita Hashijiro, one of the journalists, remembered meeting a young, weak-minded neighbor whom his wealthy family had sent to stay in Iwanosaka, a notorious slum in Itabashi Ward. So this was an expansion of the local business that took in children or disabled people, and they made money. So this things, yes, existed, but I'm sorry, I don't have any good record. Okay, now, and then I would like to argue about the balance between the home confinement and mental hospitals. So I made a kind of graph, and I'm sorry, the grayish part is the home custody patient, and number and home custody rate. And black is number of hospitalized patient and rate of hospitalization. So at 1906, there are more home custody patient, and there are about 3,000, and hospitalized patient are just over 1,000. Okay, and up to 1930 or something like that, or 35, the home custody patients number study number grew. But from the 1930s, there are clear signs of their number started to decline. Okay? Now, if compared with the hospitalized patient, these patients just grew and grew, and then after 1919, which is the year of the Mental Hospitals Act, mental hospitals started to grow, the number of patients started to grow more in a more rapid way than home confined patient, and the number changed. So we need to think that the 1920s might be a turning, might be an important period. Okay. But, you know, this idea of just admiring mental hospitals might be doctors' historiography. And they might say that, okay, mental hospitals are much better than home confinement. Okay. Now, this idea was first provided by Kureshuzo, the founder of psychiatry in Japan, published a paper on domestic confinement that was based on substantial surveys, detailed descriptions, plans, and photographs of the domestic confinement, and criticized the system of using the home in psychiatry, because as you can easily see, using the home is not very medical and not very psychiatric. They were essentially the responsibility of the family. So, but you know, there existed different presentations of domestic confinement by doctors. Some doctors said, domestic confinement might be a very good effect, and patients lived with their family member, and they have a smiling face, or something like that. And if you look at these three photos, Okay? In the left, this is a very strong confinement, don't you think so? Very thick, very huge cage, and there are two cages, and people, the patient, were almost naked. Okay, so we're talking about very strong confinement at their own home. Central, not so strong, and patient were looking at, were they all, he is almost, how do I say, going to smile. And if you look at the right thing, the patient were mild and smiling and saying hello to the photographer. So we do have different confinement at home. So we need to think about this a kind of personal differences of home confinement. And now, I'm sorry, I have to go quicker. Mental hospitals, family and patient. Ojibwe Hospital, 1909 to 1945. This was the major doctor was Komine Shigeyuki, and he graduated from the Saisei Gakusha, established in 1876, and a mass-producing medicine teaching college. And he then learned psychiatry at the University of Tokyo. He started working at Oji Brain Hospital and became the adopted son of Komine Zenjiro. He was not a doctor. He was a non-medical manager of a hotel. Okay, and in 1907, he became the medical head in 1908 and a medical manager in 1914. And I will talk about medical head and management head in a different talk. Okay, and he, due to the year, he could not go to Germany due to the First World War, and instead stayed at the Wicksell Institute in Philadelphia for about 2 years. In Philadelphia, Isaac J. Pfister funded an endowment to create a large research building known as the Pfister Institute, with a strong focus on biology and medical science. Okay. Now, Komine learned there to expand Oji Brain Hospital to have an experimental laboratory. So yes, Oji Brain Hospital had a laboratory, and to use English to write case histories for outpatients. So I listed the right side document as a kind of English written case record. Okay, and I'm sorry, not very good photograph, and the hospital was created in Nishigahara, and if you have the subway train in Tokyo, and this, nowadays, it's burned out in 1945, and the situation became very different. But, you know, you can look at the Oji Brain Hospital here. One important part is in the 1930s, it has become a kind of, a lot of houses were built there, and you have a lot of neighbors, okay? Now, please do not mix these Japanese hospital as asylums from England. And I have taken this from the Colney Hatch, which was in the farm around London. Okay, so this is an important thing. And this is the case histories. And these case histories usually have two really important sources. First is the narrative or explanation given by the family. So at the beginning, they usually have really detailed narrative or story of the family. So why this person became insane, why my wife or my husband, my father started to have serious things. And left is the standard length, and right is relatively long things. And this is the family's letters. I'm sorry. And not just family's letters. We do have a lot of narratives or explanation from the patient. Okay, so in everyday diaries or case histories, they concluded the patient said this, patient said that, or patient behaved that, and they kind of quoted the patient's words. But not just a quotation, there are many, many letters written by the patient. So in the left, I have just highlighted the patient's letter, relatively short letters up to the head of the hospital to Suzuki-sensei or Dr. Suzuki, who's one of the doctors. So these are regular letters written by narrative. And the next right-hand side, this is a relatively long letter. It's about 10 pages of letters and told why I was confined and a kind of criticism against the Japanese police and hospitals. So these are really exceptional letters. And perhaps this is about 100 pages of autobiography and the depiction of his own island in the Tohoku area, and he depicted the other patient's behavior in Japanese. So the patient had a lot of material. So in each medical encounter and independent letters, patient talked about his or their activities, okay? And so, my final story. So let me talk about one of the typical patterns, of case histories. Her name is Takahashi Fumiko, pseudonym, and she entered a first admission and second admission. And this was a really important part. She was not seriously ill. And I do not call her even psychological madness. I don't say that. And she lived in the wealthy area of Tokyo in Akasaka Ward. And she entered a woman's college, but dropped out in the second year. Okay. And if you look at her living area, this in the Akasaka area, and perhaps in the former Edo period, many daimyos lived in this area. So and many rich person just bought a piece of land here, and there are so many wealthy people living here, and she was one of these families. Okay, and what she first wanted is she wanted to get a job and to get a westernized lifestyle. She said, quote, "I wanted to go out and to work. I tried, but the parents did not let me go out." So this is her basic argument. And during the rise of the women's movement, many eminent female activists encouraged young women to get jobs. And there are very good many books which encourage young women to get a job. And Fumiko and other female patients wanted a Western lifestyle. and the clothes, hairstyles, shoes, and other urban appearances. So this is from another female patient who lived in Kyobashi area, and a doctor has written short cut hair and modern girl style. So, you know, they encountered the shortcut and very modern girl, and they wrote that at home she occupied a room for her, listened to vinyl records, moved to dancing, and stepped around. She started to become a friend with a student of Meiji University, exchanges letters with him. She is open to among sugar-coated words and talks about she likes a certain man casually and openly. So this is a very modern way of behavior. And as you might know, in this area, many hair designer started to advertise the short hair, and in the more popular things, this is from Asahi newspaper, and really famous Kampo Chinese drug, Chujoto, they used both Japanese women and short-haired and Western clothed women. So this kind of the young women's movement was, yes, evident during this area. And of course, they did have dance hall, and you can look at many women and men just getting dances. Okay, so this is something they had during this period, and many young women wanted to have this dancing hall. Okay, now we have looked at Fumiko's argument. Okay, now the parents were Let me look at the parents' argument. Parents were against Fumiko's plan to become a new woman, to get a job, adopt a modern life style, and enjoy dance halls. They particularly looked at economy, at Fumiko's economic situation. The father's question is, so how to pay fees for tuition of dancing? How to pay for the entrance fee for dance halls? How to pay for the clothes for dancing? How to pay for the restaurant after dancing with her friend? Okay, so Fumiko did not have her own money. Okay, and Fumiko steals almost all the money from her parents, and cash, her mother's clothes, jewels, and other things was stolen by Fumiko, and Fumiko sold these things and had some money. Okay, the mother told the doctors about Fumiko's condition at the time of admission on 27 April 1936, okay? And then on either 9 or 10 May, the father came and gave long and substantial details of Fumiko's recent behavior. Fumiko left the house and visited dance halls not just in Tokyo, Kobe, Kyoto, and Osaka. At Odawara, she was almost introduced to the job of prostitution, and the police almost arrested Fumiko and asked the family to do something to control this woman. So the family asked natives to come together, held a relative meeting, and discussed what they should do, and finally carried her to OBH. And perhaps this is the summary of the father's narrative, what she did. He told in about 5 pages of her behavior. So this was her criticism I'm sorry, the father's and the parents' criticism of her behavior. Okay, so we have something like this. Fumiko's argument is she needs a job, new Western clothes, hair, and a new pastime of dancing. But she was also aware of the lack of self in her behavior, and these are written and told to the nurses or doctors, and they were recorded in case histories. Now, parents' argument, emphasis on the economy, controls of payment, and the risk of police intervention. So these are similarly written in the case books. Okay, and so the patients were successful. The parents were successful in calling back Fumiko to the family's order and behavior for young women. Okay, so now perhaps finally we should ask the behavior of, yes, psychiatrists. Okay, so this was not a serious psychiatric case. Fumiko's case was rather a domestic, generational, financial, and social trouble, which is a part of the transition of modernization of Tokyo. So both the patients and the parents, particularly the father, presented their argument in substantial ways. Okay? And usually psychiatrists carefully listened to both sides, I would say, and finally took their parents' side in this case. Okay? So let's look at the behavior of psychiatrists. So what were the roles of psychiatrists at OG Brain Hospital? Now, I do not go into detail, but OBH has a really advanced scientific standard and therapeutics and something like that, malaria therapy, insulin therapy, and ECT were introduced and used extensively. I do think this the hospital learned from the United States, okay? We do have a lot of research into malarial therapy. We do have a lot of records of electro-ECT and insulin shock therapies. Okay, so they use these kind of things. And how scientific is a different question. Yes, but they used. Okay, now, but instead of concentrating on new advanced and technological treatment, psychiatrists thought about the questions of the family and the patient. Now, the second stay of Fumiko, about 2 years after, is really interesting. Fumiko was at that stage married to an clearly intellectual person with a learning in the humanities. Fumiko and the father had agreed, they had almost already agreed, okay, let's go to OG Brain Hospital, okay? And about the crucial issue is how to have a baby, okay? And they entered OBH and Fumiko was highly impressed by the treatment given by Komine, who would deal with her pregnancy problem. Instead of following the academic and scientific rules, Komine solved the problem of the family and the patient. So this is one page. The really important part is from around the second year of high school, I felt something about reproductive things, and I talked with my father and visited OBH to cure the problem. And he said she listed as a favorite books and translation of Shakespeare, Kant, Wilhelm Wundt, and I also liked physics and other subjects. Okay, and he or she wrote the medication prescribed by the hospital director is excellent or something like that. So these are the doctor's approach to the question of how to deal with this patient and the family. There's another really important thing. I will just talk about this. Oji Brain Hospital is perhaps the most prestigious private hospital, mental hospitals in Tokyo. So they are successful in attracting young, brilliant scholars. And Miura Taihei was one of them, and he treated the patient Kimura Ichiro. And Miura Taihei later became the professor of psychiatry at Keio University, and likewise, Utena Hiroshi later became professor of psychiatry at the University of Tokyo, and both Miura and Utena, they worked at the Oji Brain Hospital. Okay? And the case of Kimura was relatively frequent at OBH and in Japan and other countries. When major problems took place in newly married couples, wives were sent to OBH for help, and husbands were sent to mental hospitals or medical practitioners. You might know people like Isabella Beaton, Karen Brixen, Iwasaki Chihiro. They were all related with sexual activity and that kind of things. Okay. And Kimura had domestic harassment against the new wife. Her brother, Mikata Yoshio, was a friend of Miura at Keio Medical School, and Mikata carried Kimura to OBH, and then Miura observed Kimura in constantly negative phrases following Mikata's suggestions. Okay? The psychiatrist at OBH often worked with families and less often with the patient. In Fumiko's case, Komine worked with the original family of Fumiko and her father, despite her marriage to her husband. And in Kimura's case, Miura worked against Kimura to help Kimura's wife and her brother and to stop Kimura's harassment. So the basic structure was that psychiatrists in private mental hospitals acted, yes, in the market. What was really important was the consumer of the families who paid the fee and often followed the morality and ideology of domestic virtue rather than just promote the individual patient. Okay, let me conclude. I'm so sorry for taking too long. I'm sorry. In the large question of madness, the family was the central player in the Tokugawa area. The essential place for care and cure was the family, whether it was good or bad. With the introduction of mental hospital system to Japan, the family, I think, continued to have power, although a new medical agent appeared. The patient's discourse started to be recorded in the case histories of mental hospital, as well as the family's discourses. And finally, psychiatrists started to deal with the family first and the patient second. But I would like to argue is, yes, they also listened to the patient's argument. Okay, I'm sorry for speaking too long, but this is the end of my talk. Thank you so much.
Collège de France, le savoir en illimité. Retrouvez tous nos contenus audio et vidéo sur notre site collège-2-france.fr, les plateformes de podcast et nos chaînes YouTube.